Hello and welcome into this episode of You Seem Interesting. I'm your host, Danny Rouillet. Thank you, as always, for checking out the show. Patreon.com/FunnyDanny. If you're a subscriber, you're the best. Air high five to ye. If you're checking us out on the free platforms, that's cool too, man. We're in all the cool places. Spotify, Apple Pods, Google Play, Amazon, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcast, that's where we are. It is an honor to hang out and be a couple gigs on your phone just waiting for you to hit play. You guys are the best. So a couple of reasons I've always liked doing this show. I like doing this show. It's fun for me. There are two reasons. One, I feel like people that I've grown up with or know or in my sphere or friends of friends that I have connections with are unique and have interesting stories to tell, right? I've done everything from interviewed the national counterterrorism director to someone that runs their own brewery to people that are in the cattle and beef industry and news reporters and everything in between, right? I always think stuff like that is really cool. Well, the second thing that I really like about doing this show is I love learning stuff. And there are things that I came in knowing nothing about that I get to learn about in preparation for an interview and then ultimately doing the show. And that is the case this week. My guest is Brenton Wu, who is the, I don't know what you call him, an owner, founder, big boss. It was his idea, something called Moda Surfboards. And I can't wait to tell you about it because it's a really, really cool idea. And Brenton is full of energy and he's super, super smart, really sharp guy. He came up with a solve that I didn't know was a problem. And we'll tell you all about that here in a second. But before we do, we always do it around this time. It's the strangest gimmick in all of podcasting.
It is once again time for the strangest gimmick in all of podcasting. A moderately passable celebrity impression asking you for money.
I heard a rumor about Jim and Pam. I also heard you could go to patreon.com/funnydanny. And when you're there, they don't give you any cookies, but you could subscribe. Yeah, it's a Kevin from The Office impression. Boom. Huh? How many people are doing that 8 years later? I think the guy's name is Brian Baumgartner, by the way. And apparently he makes a killing on Cameo. I'm on Cameo. I don't make a killing. People book me on occasion. They like me to do a voice or two or something like that. I basically have to make fun of dudes that lose at fantasy football in a Donald Trump voice. Like, that's pretty much what I do there on Cameo. Cameo.com/DRouillet. If you're interested, I'm open and available. Let me tell you about Moda Surfboards. But before I do, actually, let's talk about surfing in general. So I know nothing about surfing. Have never been surfing. I never grew up going to a beach where that was possible, right? It just, you know, we went to the Outer Banks when I was a kid. Never really had waves. I never really saw anybody do it. I'd boogie board or body board or whatever. But to me, it was just about getting in the ocean, getting hot, going to the ocean, playing water sports, diving in with footballs and stuff. But people that I know that surf love it. They swear by it. It is kind of their lifestyle. It's their thing. It's their release. It's their serenity, right? And it's always looked like fun to me. I've just kind of never really done it. Well, the surf industry itself is a fast-growing section of both business and kind of subculture going around the sport, right? Surfing is still cool. And they've done a really good job, and this is sort of like the corporation side of this thing, right? There are four main surf apparel board kind of companies. We'll go into the big four here in a second. But they're worth in excess of $10 billion at this point. That's the surf industry. So for this sort of cool underground movement that's very hip, man, and it's got the young feel and vibe to it, you're not going to see a 50-year-old in anybody's advertising anytime soon. It's about youth and young and, you know, sort of independence and rebellion and these kind of things that are very marketed effectively, right, in terms of branding. It's one part serenity, one part action sport, one part just kind of cool counterculture thing. And this sort of whole world is wrought with trouble. There are a lot of problems here and a lot of contradictory things that go on in the world of surfing, right? So for all this sort of, hey, we're different, man, we're counterculture, Rip Curl, Quicksilver, Billabong, O'Neill, that's your big four. Again, that's a $10 billion industry. There's nothing independent about that. It's like one of those guys that tells you about an independent band. He's like, you don't know, man, they're called the Rolling Stones. Yeah, it's a corporate thing at this point, right? And here's the other part. There's this connection to nature that's kind of inherent and intrinsic with surfing and surfers. It's something that's, you know, the people that are devotees of it oftentimes will talk about. Well, here's the thing. Surfboards have a really, really high cost of entry. Board shorts can run about $200. All the chemicals and stuff in surfboards are so pollutive and gross and terrible for us, right? From polyurethane to resins and everything in between is toxic to the planet's ecosystem. And everything as small as the the amount of sunscreen that you're going to have to wear, that is good for coral reefs and anything else. There's nothing that's that sort of symbiotic about it, right? But we're going for rides and we love it. And surf wax is also toxic to marine life and everything else kind of in between. So it's this sort of weird dichotomy, right, that I find. And I'm not being critical, just kind of pointing it out. Just my hands are kind of up in that GIF. You know, not that GIF, but that little emoji that we've got all on our phones. We're just kind of shrugging our shoulders going, hey, I just kind of learned this. I didn't know this beforehand, but this is sort of where we are. This $10 billion industry. So that's one of the things that my guest, Brenton Wu, this week wanted to solve, right? The idea that everything kind of in and around surfboards doesn't biodegrade, is very toxic, and is not necessarily very good for the environment, right? That's one problem that Brenton wanted to solve. The second thing is these surfboards are really expensive. The point of entry is very high, and they can break because it's stiff and static, right? Every board has more or less been the same forever. And somebody will come up with an innovation and this is faster, this is more sleek, or this shark fin does this or that other thing. But you've pretty much got this same design forever. And Brenton did something completely different. You got to check it out. It's motasurfboards.com. If you're a surfer, if you know a surfer, anybody in your family, extended family, friends, whatever, who are into this thing, check it out and see it for yourself. I couldn't tell you the difference. I've never been surfing, but Brenton can. He's passionate about it, and he's sort of an engineer, entrepreneur, whatever you're going to call it by trade. And he's one of those guys that likes to look at a problem and solve it, and he'll tell you about it here in a moment. So enjoy my chat with Brenton Wu of Moda Surfboards. So I'm trolling on LinkedIn, right? I get a couple of connections, one of those like, hey, some dude wants to connect. And then I see one of my suggestions. It's a guy that was a couple years ahead of me in high school who had the natural progression of going to school at William & Mary in Colonial Williamsburg on the East Coast. And now he's a founder of a surfboard company. Brenton Wu is with me, the founder of Moda Surfboards. Brenton, thanks for the time, man. I appreciate it.
Hey, yeah. Thanks for having me on here. It's great.
So you wanted to be known as the founder. We were just having a conversation before the start of the show here about entrepreneurship and how that maybe that word has jumped the shark a little bit, whereas founder feels more real to you. I'd love for you to go into that.
Yeah. It's just, I think entrepreneur these days, it's the word kind of has been used so many ways, socially speaking, it's lost meaning. I mean, like the dictionary says that entrepreneur is like anyone who finances a business, right? And really, that's not what we mean when we say an entrepreneur. And especially with like, you know, the rise of Facebook and the tech boom back in 2010, entrepreneur kind of, like socially speaking, kind of just means like anyone with an idea, maybe an app or something. It's not, to me, the word I prefer to use is founder. Because I think a founder means that not only do you have an idea, but you put a stake in the ground, you've done something about it, and you're kind of moving forward from there. So, I mean, I hate to be pedantic about it, but that's, me personally, I prefer the word founder. It means you've done something.
Well, you certainly have done something here. So I want to know about this process, and I'm fascinated by this. So your classmate, a good friend of mine, Teddy Sullivan, was an entrepreneur as well, or founder, whatever you want to call it, sold his company that he came up with this great idea, found a hole in the marketplace, and did very well, sold his app and sort of platform to Dick's Sporting Goods, right? I want to know when you go, I got this idea. How do you go from just the idea phase to we're now going to get into this really crowded and challenging marketplace? I want to get to the marketplace in a second. But you went from idea to reality. And as you very well put it, Brenton, stake in the ground. I talk about that process.
All right. Well, maybe to give it a little context, I think when we say, you know, founders, people who you know, start businesses and all that stuff, I mean, there's really three distinct groups. And there's overlap, and you have to kind of know all three, but a founder tends to fall into three groups. And one is like the brand kind of guy. And their talent is really like emotionally connecting with people. Like for example, like let's look at like, say Nike, right? They didn't invent shoes. They just invented a mm-hmm. brand that really connects with people, and that's their talent, right? I mean, are their shoes good? Fine, whatever the good. I don't know. But their brand is what resonates with people. Another group is what I'm going to call like a market pioneer, in that they see opportunities in the market and then they go for that. You know, they're not necessarily a brand guy or the third category, which I'll get to. But in other words, these guys are willing to take risks. And how do you teach someone to take risks? You kind of don't. So that's what I call a market pioneer. So an example of that, I mean, and we could argue this all day, but I would put in people like Elon Musk, right? Like, he didn't invent PayPal. He didn't invent electric cars, but he saw the opportunity and he went after it. Now, the third group of founders are product guys. And this is where I put myself in. So to come up with the idea, to go to answer your question, come up with the idea, I see a problem and I come up with a solution for it. And that's where my talent lies, is in solving unstructured problems, because the best problems are the ones people don't understand are problems. They just accept it as the way life is. And when you solve those problems, it sometimes it blows people's minds, and sometimes it doesn't. But that's where my process starts. Like, what problems can I solve? And what's great about this is there's infinite problems in this world, right? So just like, you know, pick one, identify one and pick one. Now, how do we teach that? I don't know. But that's what I do. That's where my process starts.
I love that categorization, and that's very salient. It makes a lot of sense. So tell me what problem you're solving here, because I get the sense that I have an idea, but again, I'm just a pudgy Rube in my basement right now. What problem did you solve with Moda Surfboards?
Sure. Okay, so what I did was I invented, developed, and patented and commercially deployed a way to make surfboards flex like snowboards. So just to give a quick non-technical overview to her, because I'm assuming not everyone here surfs, is that traditionally surfboards, conventional surfboards, are made of rigid fiberglass construction. So rigid, which means they have fixed shapes. And a shape is how a surfboard works. Now, the problem is when you're using a fixed shape in a dynamic environment like a wave, which is constantly changing shape, that shape is not optimal. So to have a surfboard flex like a snowboard, it allows the board to adapt to the wave. The result is, for the average surfer, you have, or the average person, like a person that may not even surf, boards made from Moda technology they're going to be safer, easier to surf, durable, and less expensive. Yet for the hardcore surfer, the added benefit of flex is actually higher performance than fiberglass. Crap, that was a really bad explanation, man.
It's a great explanation. And here's the thing that I think is the challenge. And you tell me if I'm off base on this. So I played baseball in college, and I'm washed up and gross. But baseball players, as you come up, once you find your thing, right, whatever, if it's your bat, your glove, your model, the way you like your uniform socks, the way that, you know, you tuck in your shirt to your pants, whatever it is, they're creatures of habit. I get the sense that surfers and any other athletes in that space are very similar. How do you get them to understand, no, this is better. This is accessible. If you want to start, here's your spot, the accessible surf. I think it makes a lot of sense, again, to someone that's a novice that's never done it. How do you crack that marketplace of habit doing something else?
Yeah, you just hit like that. That's like one of the biggest challenges, I think, that I'm broadly speaking, pretty much any startup has, mm-hmm. if you are any product startup has. So as a technical entrant, you're introducing something that does something no product before has ever done. So like I said, no surfboard before has flexed like a snowboard. This is the first Moda surfboards. This is the first time it's happened. Getting people to try it, holy crap, it is so difficult. It's like you would think if you have something that solves everyone's problem, it's like build it and they will come, but it's not like that. Like, one of the things I learned is never, ever underestimate the power of familiarity. Like, people know what they know and they do not want to let go of it, no matter how attractive the alternative is, how attractive the solution you're presenting is. And as a technology entrant, what I'm saying is believe that this works, right? I'm not a brand guy saying, hey, this is sexier than the other thing, right? Or we're cooler than the other thing. And I'm not like, a market pioneer saying, hey, here's a huge opportunity, we're gonna make money versus over there, you know? It's not like that. I have to convince people that my product works. And my challenge is, like, I'm not Kelly Slater. Right? I'm like Kelly Slater being the biggest name in surfing, right? If my name is Kelly Slater, everyone would be trying Moda surfboards, everyone would be loving it. It just takes time. Like, it takes being correct over time. So for example, my first customer was Infinity Surfboards out in Dana Point, California. It took 2 years and four prototypes working with them before they're like, you know what? Okay, we'll place an order. We'll try this out commercially. You know, it took a long time to convince them it works. But that's the challenge. It just takes time. Unless you have clout, yeah, it's really slow going.
So take me back then to the invention. So as you're obviously, you've got a surfing background. I know you've done that. You worked at a surfing company in previous experience. How do you go from, you know what's missing on this surfboard that's been the same since like the Beach Boys videos of like the 1950s. You know, it's been the exact same in surfboarding forever. This is the problem. How do you come up with that part of it? I'm fascinated by that element where you where the lightning bolt strikes and you go, oh, I've got an idea. Make it flexible like a snowboard.
Yeah, well, strangely enough, I mean, I'll tell you when it was. July 3rd, 2009, I was sitting in my kitchen in San Diego. And
it's like a Dr. Brown moment from Back to the Future.
Right,
you fell and hit your head while hanging a clock?
Yeah. Comes out the flux capacitor. Now, I remember where I was. And, okay, so the problem was at that time, before that, I was like maybe the day before, the week before, like I broke a surfboard. And, yeah. And that happens all the time. They just may have foam and fiberglass. I mean, they're strong enough, but they're not very durable, surfboards are. So the point is, okay, so now I'm a surfer and I'm in need of a surfboard, yet I don't want to buy one. Isn't that kind of weird if like a surfer doesn't want to buy a surfboard? And that's not just me. I mean, anecdotally, most surfers are really hard up to buy surfboards because they know you spend $600, which you know at the time, that's like you spend rent on a board that could break your first session. That's like, that doesn't seem like a really, a real smart choice, right? So I'm like, well, that's a problem if I'm a surfer and I don't want to buy surfboards, okay? And I'm no snowflake. There must be other people like me, okay? That realization, I think, show me, hey, there's a problem. So now how do we solve it? So now I got to list out, what don't I like about surfboards? And then you can say, oh, well, the performance in certain ways, or you can say, oh, they're not durable, or they don't look cool, or they don't smell right, or whatever your complaint is. And, and then it's going to, so what, out of all these things I don't like, which ones can I do something about? It eventually led to, actually, the first iteration of Moto is actually a wood composite designed to replace the foam in surfboards altogether. Because I thought, okay, foam's a problem. Foam is, the core of surfboards are foam. And since it's so weak, it has to be fiberglass. And all that's really terrible for the environment. And it's not really not that strong. It's like, well, if we replace a foam, then that's a big deal. So I use wood composite, which is really strong. But again, it was hard to get this thing to catch on. People were like, oh, we use foam for so long. Why am I using wood now? And the weight is different and the look is different, yada, yada, yada. But we did make a prototype out of wood and it flexed. And we're like, wait a second. And that, so I'll show it to all these other brands. And it was actually the flexible aspect that was really wowing people. I was like, what? That's what you're interested in? The flex? So then I started looking at what other kind of boards flex. I flex for function. Flex, is what makes them work. Snowboards. So I use, so what Moto is, I've combined snowboard technology with surfboard foam to make surfboards flex. And that's how I got from, from A to B, but that's how I originally came with the idea. So I originally came with the idea because I wanted to make surfboards that I wanted to buy, but then it sort of rolled on its own to a degree.
That's fascinating. So the idea was started in one place and then you go, wait, this is the appeal. You didn't even realize that was what it was going to be. I mean, I think that sounds like Twitter to me, honestly, where it's like people are going to do status updates like they do on Facebook, except it's one sentence. And then it morphed into this amazing thing, right?
Yeah, Twitter sort of a good parallel to Moda in some ways, an analogy. Because like what Twitter is technically, all it is an open messaging platform. That's what it is. Yeah. I mean, Jack Dorsey said so himself, it's an open messaging platform. But the way you can use it is so broad. Like you can broadcast, you can direct message, you can group chat, you can, get your news from it, you control people, whatever. There's so many different ways to use an open messaging platform. And that's the same thing with Moto technology, right? So I'm just making surfboards flex, but that means so much to surfboards because now you can have soft surfboards that perform as well or better than fiberglass surfboards, which traditionally is not the case. Traditionally, soft surfboards suck. They're like noodles and they're terrible. But now soft surfboards actually outperform fiberglass surfboards. Another problem is, to the environment, surfers tend to be environmentally sensitive. Well, foam and fiberglass never decompose. They never break down to biologically benign components. They're terrible for the environment. There's no ways to cut it. They're terrible for the environment. Well, now motor surfboards are made from, polyethylene plastic, which is recyclable, easily recyclable compared to, conventional surfboards. And because we're using polyethylene plastic, the cost to produce a board is lower as well. So we're making cheaper, more durable surfboards that have higher performance. It's like, why isn't this a win? Why is it so hard to convince people to try this? That's the challenge I'm facing.
No, I believe it. So now as you, I had an entrepreneur on as well a few months ago. He's the founder and CEO of Wave Soda, right? Where he was in a similar way, he had a beverage background, but he's facing a problem where everybody's fat. He's like heavier than he should be. He loves soda. What do I do? So he comes up with this incredible beverage that's, you know, that's carbonated, little tiny bit of fruit juice, but a fraction of the sugar, carbs, and everything else. And boom, he knows the idea is a home run, and now we're full speed ahead. When do you go, this is better than just a good idea, this is full speed ahead, and then walk me through the steps, right? Where you go, hey, this is a cool idea. What if, like a pulley system, or wouldn't this be fun there was an elevator and help? So now you know this is not just a cool idea. This is a winner.
Okay, so that was, strangely enough, July 28th, 2015. Well, because it was a moment, right? It's such a moment that I remember it. So, yeah, we were at San Clemente. We were camping with my girlfriend at the time, wife now. And they have her friends have an annual camping trip in San Clemente. And that's where I came. That's where it all came together. So in 2015, I was busy hammering out prototypes. I'm like, snowboard flex and surfboards. Like, why wouldn't it work? Like, no one does it, but why would it not work? So I kept making prototypes to make sure, like, does this work or does this not work? And at that time, we did a prototype. I was like, wait a second. This works. Like, it doesn't work. I mean, I can see how it can work at 100%. Maybe it was working at 50%, but it has potential there. Like, it doesn't suck. Right, that's really the measuring stick at the time, because when you're doing something new, there really isn't a measuring stick except for what came before. But since you're doing something new, it's not really apples to apples, right? So, we made prototypes that flex like snowboards, and we were basically just gluing snowboards onto the bottom of soft surfboards, and that's literally what we were doing, And I was like, no, this board doesn't suck. It's actually pretty easy to ride. Maybe go further into it, So really, that's sort of the moment. I'm not really sure about what steps. Like, there weren't any like concrete steps. I knew I had to get out there, but I also knew I had to develop the technology at the time, because at that moment, the technology was still, it was nascent, right? It was new. It wasn't even ready for me to patent. I wouldn't even patent it till the next year. So I just had to keep pushing at it until, it was in 2016. Then it was ready at a state where it was ready to be patented, and the patent passed. So, it took years, but I was granted a patent on my design. And we had, a more mature product that people were willing to pay for. So it was like baby steps. It was more like, steps sound kind of organized, or it's more like just clawing tooth and nail. That's what's more like. It's like you're on a muddy cliff, hanging on by your fingernails, and you're just kind of clawing. It's not very attractive, but that's what it feels like, more like than steps.
Gotcha. So, and that leads me to this question here. You've got startup experience. You've got founding experience, right? And I want to get to that line where you go, you know what? I'm not going to have a boss anymore. And you kind of start on your own. It's something I admire greatly. But that startup process, is it getting investors at this point? Is it no, I'm self-financing this thing? I mean, talk about the balance there. And what's the most challenging part of that startup process where you're on that muddy cliff?
I think, especially in the early days, it's putting together a formidable team. Because maybe not with other things, but certainly with the product, you're not going to do it yourself. Like, I'm not going to do it myself, right? I'm going to need some manufacturing capacity, distribution, and investors, stuff like that. I need to put together a formidable team. And that's really difficult at the very beginning, because as a startup founder, you kind of have no credibility. All you have is an idea. So how can you convince people to join your team, especially when they have other things to do, like, take care of their kids or their day job, or, you know what I'm saying? It's like, people have responsibilities. So how do you get them to even put an arm into your pool and help you paddle along? And it's so crucial, I think, to get a team together. I would say that's probably a bigger challenge than most people would let on for startup at the very beginning.
That's something you don't hear about. I think that's a great one. That's very thoughtful. Give me the moment for you on your journey where you go, you know what? I'm not working for anybody else. I'm not doing this thing where I report to a boss, and you've struck out on your own a couple different times over, Brenton. I think it's awesome. And you sort of brand yourself as this problem solver, which you've done a couple times over here. When did you decide I'm not going to have a 9-to-5 and take HR training online?
Just for the record, I have no problem with 9-to-5 jobs or working for anyone. I really have no problem with that. I mean, in fact, in many ways, I would like to do that. But my problems are, Okay, when you're talking about like organizational like overhead, say like dealing with the HR, dealing with like, I mean, that's really with big organizations, right? And the solution to that is work with a smaller organization where, you know, you're not necessarily cubbied into a job where you have multiple roles. I think you tend to find the bureaucracy less because you kind of are the bureaucracy, maybe. But also, I really have no problem with working for people, but my stipulation is whoever I work for needs to make decisions based on the information better than I would. And I mean, that's arguable, but like, boy, I mean, I've worked for some pretty bad people, you know, in my past. So for me to go with Moda in my, you know, my previous business before Moda was actually a snowboard company in Tahoe. So that's how I got my snowboard background. It was called Automaton Snowboards. I based it out of Tahoe, and I shut Automaton back in 2012 because it didn't snow for like six seasons. Well, not six, but like three seasons in Tahoe. It's really hard to sell snowboards where it doesn't snow. So I shut Automaton. I rolled over my knowledge, experience, and capital into Moda at the very beginning. But yeah, it's not necessarily about not working for someone. It's just I think that what I want to do ultimately, my goal is to make the world better off because I was in it, right? So I need to do things that make the world, right, just better off. And I think, I mean, in my opinion, surfing is one of those things. Surfing is one of those things that, you know, thanks to like the Beach Boys and Gidget and Fast Times at Ridgemont High, I bet you can go to someone in Siberia and they have an opinion on surfing. And their opinion is probably favorable. Like, oh, it's California. It's cool. Even if it's just that, you know what I'm saying? Like they have an opinion thanks to some pop culture. And I think it's one of those things that people can, it can help people look upwards, maybe. So I think spreading the values of surfing, I think is a positive. I think that making surfboards better is a first step. I know this is a long chain of like, you know, arguably linked, you know, thought processes, but that's how it goes. I think that making surfboards, you know, more durable, safer, easier, more fun, I think that, well, it helps surfing as a whole. And I think as a long shot, that could probably help the world as a whole. And that's kind of the most, it's not about working for someone else. I guess it's about doing something that matters. And again, people will argue, oh, well, surfing doesn't matter or whatever. You know, I mean, there's people that argue sports matters and sports doesn't matter or whatever it is, you know, there's a lot of sports fans out there, you know? so it's all arguable really, but that's the sense I get rather than, I don't want to work for someone. Because I mean, if someone came up to me and they had a good idea and they can make decisions better than me, I would gladly fall in line and work for them. It's not like, it's not necessarily like a stipulation for my career path, you know?
No, that makes sense. And I'd just like to add, as a sports radio host, sports matter very much. And I hope all my listeners feel that way forever so that I can keep having a job. But I love that answer. My last one for you, I've already kept you too long. Let's combine this thing. Give me a low moment. Give me an, oh my God, what have I done type moment on your journey. And then give me a touchdown spike. Give me something triumphant. It could be that first deal that you made with Infinity or otherwise. Give me a tough time that you just kind of felt like, okay, that's it. This is over. Holy and then cow. Give me a touchdown spike.
I mean, I have answers, but I'm afraid they might be a little disappointing because the answers for both these questions are not like moment ones. Like I'm not going to rattle off a date to you, but like the low moment, I mean, sometimes it kind of feels like one big low moment. You know, it feels like it's always an uphill battle. And it's always a challenge. And like, when do you want to throw in the towel? Holy crap. I've thought that so many times. It's like, you know, I'm not getting any younger. Do I quit this now? Do I, you know, is there still a light at the end of the tunnel? That's kind of like an ongoing thing. So it's not a specific low moment. It's sometimes it just feels like one big low moment. But on the other hand, when's a touchdown spike? There, I'm going to go ahead and say there really isn't one. I mean, there are moments when I feel happy. Like, you know, like when I see a surfer out there on a motorboard and they're having fun. I'm like, whoa, that's kind of cool. Like I had an idea and this person thinks it's worth their time and money to get one and they're enjoying it. That's a good feeling, right? But that's not what I'm after, right? What I'm after is something broader, maybe. I'll give you the hypothetical situation. The hypothetical situation that will make me feel like a touchdown spike, that will make me feel like a success, say. And success, my definition of success is, you know, when a person understands their potential and then lives up to it. right? That's success. Understanding your potential and living up to it. Now, I don't care what the dictionary says. In the realm of entrepreneurship or founder, that's what success means to me. I think I will feel like a success at the point, my touchdown will be a point when there's another founder who comes to me for help, as in support, as in like, it could be anything. It could be like, they just want to ask me a question based on my experience. They could want me to be an investor in their idea, or a board of directors or something, or whatever it is. When another founder feels like I am useful to them, I think that's when I'll feel successful.
Bretton, this was terrific, man. Really appreciate the time, dude. You're interesting as hell. Congrats on all your success and what you're going to accomplish. It is awesome, and your passion comes right through, man. I appreciate the time.
Hey, thanks a lot, Danny.
Thank you again to my guest, founder of Moda Surfboards, Bretton Wu. Great conversation. I loved a number of things out of it that I want to pull out here. So again, I said this at the top of the show. There are so many cool things about being able to do this, and I'm very lucky to be able to, you know, have a little bit of free time and be able to put this thing together and have some of the connections that I do and have it grown up where I did and knowing some of the people that I know, right? I've had a number of really, really cool conversations that I never would have had otherwise, and I love that. I also love hearing from people who can look at the exact same thing as me and see it in a completely different way. Right? Where our objective reality is one thing and they go, well, yeah, it's that, but it doesn't have to be. I never would have thought of a lot of the things that Bretton was talking about. And that's what's so interesting to me about this. So my favorite answer was one of the first ones he gave about the categorization of entrepreneurship or founders or who these guys actually are, right? It's the strength of a brand. His example of Nike was perfect. Nike didn't invent footwear. They invented this brand that really gravitates, really, you know, holds a lot of weight with people. Then there's the sort of product guy, and then there's the sort of open-ended problem solver. And therein lies where Bretton has sort of, you know, carved his niche out in his really interesting career that he's had and gone through. I love that answer. And that just sort of crystallized for me, you know, the difference between a, you know, Steve Jobs and Elon Musk or a Jeff Bezos or otherwise, right? I mean, it's just so fascinating and interesting to me to have that. And he's got that real world experience, very tangible for him to do. And I loved his Doc Brown moment. How cool was that? Where he's like, I'll tell you where it was. It was June 9th. I mean, that's amazing that he knows where the lightning struck, right? When it came to his idea to go again from, hey, this is, it's the beginning formulations of my brain examining a problem, finding a solution. And from there, we've got prototypes, we've got patents, we've got product, we've got launch, we've got fundraising and all this other kind of stuff. And for him to acknowledge, I don't want to say his weaknesses, but acknowledge sort of his, I don't even know what the right way to describe this, but I was really not surprised, but fascinated by his answer of, it's not that I don't want to work for anybody anymore. I'll work for anyone if I feel like, you know, it's the right skill set or if it's the right place and otherwise. And he'll feel as though he's made it and be able to kind of plant his stake in the ground in this game when someone would seek him out in terms of, you know, sort of the mentorship role, right? Like the Gandalf of the party, right? If somebody turns and asks for wisdom from Bretton Wu, he'll feel that much more accomplished, which is interesting. I mean, the folks that I've had on that I would describe, and apologies to Bretton here, but as entrepreneurs, my buddy Aaron Price, who founded Propelify, Teddy Sullivan, who did Game Changer, and a couple of the other guys that have just sort of started things just because the idea of this work belonging to somebody else, they couldn't handle it. You could see that, right? Where Aaron has made these incredible things, these festivals and all this other stuff. He's been so successful. And he was already kind of looking at his watch going, yeah, I'm going to start something else pretty soon. We're going to move on to the next project to build from scratch. You know, a lot of people are going, yeah, see how much I could sell this thing for and go on an island somewhere and maybe use a motor surfboard. But Aaron is just wired differently. And I've always been so impressed by that. And you could see that from Brenton as well. So really thought that was a cool couple of answers there as you go forward. But I'm just fascinated by that because, you know, I was joking with my buddy Jeremy Carman, who was on a couple weeks ago, one of the proprietors of the Salt Line, great restaurant episode. It's actually should be available here this week for free on all the different podcasting platforms. And we've sort of joked about like funny restaurant ideas that, no, and they're by no means serious and not something that we should pursue. But like, I come up with ideas all the time. Wouldn't it be cool if this happened? Wouldn't it be cool if that happened? Well, the difference between rank and file idiots like me and guys like Bretton is not only do those things, are the ideas they strike, A, they're more salient, B, they're more practical, and C, they're implemented. That's what's so amazing to me about somebody like Brenton. And you could hear his energy and his enthusiasm and just, you know, just the dizzying intellect, the way that his mind works is pretty cool. And I like stuff like that an awful lot. But I find it very, very impressive to go from, wouldn't it be neat if, and then next thing you know, you now have a company and you're ride or die for that. So again, check out motosurfboards.com and check out what I'm talking about. If you are surf adjacent, give it a go, man, and let me know how it is. And tweet me at @interest_pod if you are a surf guy or gal and sort of know about that world. I would love to hear about it, man. It's really cool. Good luck to Brenton cracking into that industry. I mean, we talked about that a little bit, but the barrier to get through in the surfing world is a high one. It's tough. These are creatures of habit, and sort of convincing them not only to try but to stick with is certainly a challenge. But if anybody can do it, that guy can. So thank you again to Brenton Wu for joining me. He's the founder of Moto Surfboards, motosurfboards.com. That's going to do it for us here on You Seem Interesting. Really appreciate you guys checking out the show. And patreon.com/funnydan. You want to support the team? That's awesome. We got columns for $1. We got $2 tiers all the way up to 50 if you want to feel generous and benevolent. And you can be awesome and high-five yourself and congratulate yourself for supporting the arts or whatever it is you think that I'm doing over here. Also, check us out for free a couple of weeks later on all the other platforms that we mentioned here at the top of the show. It's Amazon, Apple Pod, Spotify, Stitcher, all the cool stuff. We be on there. Thank you to my producer, Andrew Russell of Kiwanda Sound, kiwandasound.com for all of those sound edit needs. I was actually asked this by somebody the other day. Kiwanda's with a K. That's Kiwanda with a K. Appreciate all you guys checking out the show. We'll be back next week. Same bad time, same bad channel. And until then, you seem interesting.